Russian retaliation. They promised following American sanctions for their cyber warfare, they'd strike back, and the Russian government didn't wait long. Not even 12 hours later, Russian government authorities ordering the closure of the Anglo-American School of Moscow, a U.S. official confirms. The school serves U.S., British, and Canadian children of embassy personnel.
New economic data showing a drop in U.S. exports last month pushed the country's trade deficit in goods higher, while the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits fell last week in a positive sign for the labor markets.
Get out to Cook County in Illinois, one of the many places across the country facing a minimum wage hike in 2017. But one town says it's opting out of that law because it lies on the county border.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala in for Steve Grzanich today here on The Opening Bell. It's 5.09 a.m. It is the, what is today? Is it the 30th of December? It's the last business day of the year, everybody. If you got a tax-deductible donation you want to make, you better get a postcard and get it in the mail. Get it posted in the mail. This is The Opening Bell. Thanks for joining us. A lot to watch in the stock market today. We're only a couple hundred away from 20,000. Will we actually break through before the year finally ends? Talking about your investments in the year ahead, joining us on the phone right now is Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, it was a good year for stocks this year, but looking ahead, is this bullish sentiment going to continue?
Well, it may continue into the early part of the year. Really, when you take a look at the year as a whole, the good year started at the end of the elections. Up until the elections, the markets were up only a couple percentage points. And from that point, from the election year on, we added 6 to 8 percentage points onto the S&P. It may carry into the new year a little bit, but right now I think there's a lot of euphoria about the changes that the Trump presidency will bring, more employment, higher wages, which will translate to spending. All of those things, I think, are being priced into the market right now. And I think the markets are setting up for the potential, at least, for a disappointment if some of those things don't come through.
President-elect Trump likes to tout the jobs, the bullish sentiment, everything else that's gone on since Election Day, and that gets discredited a bit in the media. Would you say that there is some truth to that, that he can claim that, hey, the market's gone up and that a lot of this is based on the idea of the policies he'll bring forth?
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, you can see that when the election occurred and from that point on, and taking a look just at the industry groups that have done well since the election and those that have done poorly. The parts of the market that have done very well since the election are the industrial names, basic materials, what I would call the stocks that would hurt if you were to drop their product on your foot. The parts of the market that haven't done as well, technology, utilities, a lot of the consumer staples, they're a little bit more interest rate sensitive, and technology has struggled here a little bit because of Trump's belief that at least technology is a rough part of the economy and does not get along very well with many of the CEOs in Silicon Valley.
Well, so we've got rising interest rates, and that could be a big issue for these companies moving forward. How will that play into stocks as we move into 2017?
Normally, interest rates rise and the expectation that inflation is going up and the Fed is going to fight inflation by increasing interest rates. But it has a couple knock-on effects. One is that cost of borrowing obviously is higher, and the biggest borrower right now is the U.S. government. So as we turn over all of our T-bills and treasuries, et cetera, in the coming year, the cost of that is going to increase. The second part is that tends to dampen economic growth, not immediately, but over some time. So it creates a little bit of competition for dollars going into the equity markets. If I'm getting a very good yield on my bonds, I may put that money into bonds instead. So it creates a little bit of a headwind for U.S. stocks. We haven't seen this dynamic really since 2006, 2007. From 2008 on, interest rates have come down and have been zero ever since. So we're in a period now where for the first time in really about 10 years, we're starting to see an interest rate increasing environment.
What about trade? That's a big platform of President-elect Trump. He talked about how we have to get tougher on the trade deals. How is that going to affect some of our larger companies that make a lot of products overseas?
Oh, they make a lot of product, and we sell a lot of product overseas. So you can see that in the dollar. The dollar has been very strong most of the year, and again, especially since the election. And as the dollar strengthens, that makes it more difficult for many of the multinational companies, think GE, IBM, McDonald's, that do a lot of their business overseas. It makes it tougher for them to sell those goods overseas. So we've had a trade deficit. We continue to have a trade deficit, which means we import more than we export. The higher dollar makes it easier for us to import more goods cheaply. So it's good for us. If you want to do travel, now is a great time to do your traveling as well because of the higher dollar. But it's going to make it difficult for those companies to improve their earnings as we go forward with that higher dollar. It's just going to be a tougher environment for them.
Paul Nolte is with Kingsview Asset Management. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the year ahead and when the inauguration finally comes. Right now, it's been a lot of sentiment over what the change is going to be. How easily is it to affect a lot of that change once President-elect Trump gets into office, and how will that affect things moving forward? Here on the Opening Bell, some stories we're following today. Oil prices are on track for their biggest yearly gain since 2009. And the Chicago Tribune business section today has an interesting story about Amazon and their latest idea. Of course, Amazon wants to deliver goods to you via drone. Now they want to send airships, big Zeppelins, to stadiums and to deliver you things on demand as you're sitting there in your seat at the Cubs game. Could you imagine a little drone flying down and delivering you a T-shirt, a little Chris Bryant T-shirt to wear during the seventh inning? Yep, that's what Amazon's looking to do. They filed patents for that. Paul Nolte with Kingsview Asset Management will be back with us in just a moment. Now let's get a check of your money.
Hey, it's your money. Playing host this New Year's Eve? Wallet Hub's Jill Gonzalez says you don't have to go broke.
Most Americans spend less than $200 on their celebrations, about 85%. 50% this year are planning to actually celebrate it right at home.
A lot of the money is going to go to the bubbly. We'll drink more than 360 million glasses of sparkling wine on Saturday night, and most people will spend an average of $20 a bottle. But don't drink and drive, because a DUI can set you back an average of $10,000. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
5:20 in the morning. Matt Bubala in for Steve Grzanich here on The Opening Bell. We're speaking with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, a story came out yesterday that holiday sales may have had their biggest yearly jump since the recession. A lot of that, you know, that's interesting because I understand that market managers and people in the know like you are bullish about the policies coming forward. I wouldn't imagine that trickles down to the American people quite as quickly for more holiday spending. How do you attribute the big jump there?
When you take a look at the consumer has been deleveraging or reducing their level of debt really since the financial crisis. And when you take a look at overall debt is a very big number and has gotten large during that period of time, but it's shifted. It's shifted away from the individual and more on sovereign debt. So governments around the world have taken on more debt. So when you look at the consumer balance sheet, the consumer's balance sheet is actually in reasonably good shape. And again, the expectations, and that's what a lot of this has been built on since the election, the expectations for a much better economy, better job profile, et cetera, has allowed some of that to happen. And where you have seen the retail sales occur is really more online than in the brick and mortar. So even though Target, Walmart, et cetera, are doing okay, really, a lot of the retail sales have come from Amazon and other online retailers, and that's where the consumers have been spending the bulk of their dollars.
You know, that's interesting because there were some stories just a couple of weeks ago on maybe that trend reversing just a little bit, that more people were looking online and then actually going into brick-and-mortar stores to shop, even if that's a small trend, that's certainly not the larger overall picture, right?
No, it's not. And it's been something that we've been witnessing really over the last 5 to 6 years. And when you take a look at the stock performance of retailers, Certainly the online retailers have been the much better performing parts of the retail landscape.
When you talk about the consumer being in better shape as far as debt, that we've done a good job since the recession of maybe bringing down individual debt a little bit, I imagine it's a really good thing we did that, because now with the economy doing well and interest rates going up, a lot of people that carry home equity loans, other variable interest rate debt, that could get a little tougher in the year ahead, right?
It could. And when you take a look at, when you take a look at the consumer, you take a look at how they've handled mortgages, the bulk of mortgages are still fixed rate. So you still have some that are variable. Bulk of those, though, are fixed rate. And so those don't really change. They don't change at all as interest rates go up. A lot of those individuals are probably slow paying, meaning I'm paying my minimum amount that I owe. And as interest rates rise, the thought is, too, real estate, and real estate has been rising, so the value of the home has gone up. So you've got much more equity in your house at this point than you've had in the last 6 or 7 years.
Do we over-talk about maybe sometimes interest rates going up? They're raised such a small little bit of a percentage point. It might happen a couple of times over the year, but if the economy retracts at all, they'll stop raising interest rates. So is it something that maybe we don't need to be too concerned about?
Early on, probably not. You know, the first interest rate hike or two, not too much of a big deal. And since we're coming from such a low level, we're talking about right now interest rates that are all of a half of one percentage point on the very short-term area. 30-year bonds are 3%, 3.25%. Again, not a big number when you compare it to historical norms. It's the trend that's most important, and the Fed has come out and said, you know, we're going to be raising rates three times in 2017. Now, to be fair, they also said they were going to raise rates four times in 2016. We only got the one. So, again, we take a look at the data. We look at the economic information that comes in, and we're making our judgments as we go along, as does the Fed. So the employment numbers, wage growth are a couple key parts of the economy that we take a look at on a monthly basis to determine if the Fed is going to stay on that three-rate increase policy that going forward that they've talked about in the past.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. So here we are on the last business day of the year, Paul. It's our time to kind of look back at how our investments did, how our retirement is looking. As you look to 2017, is there any advice for investors of what we should be looking to try to change about our personal investments, or something exciting in the year ahead that you think people should jump on?
Well, one of the things that we're starting to see after 5-6 years of very poor performance, and it's made investors really take a look at being domestic, meaning the U.S. economy has done better than most around the world, and the U.S. stock market has done better than many economies around the world. We're starting to see a little bit of a shift in that. Dollar has gone up dramatically. We don't anticipate that to continue. So if the dollar flattens out, comes down over the course of the year, we think actually investors will be better off by putting their money overseas. International investing, and more specifically emerging markets, those continue to be some of the cheapest parts of the markets around the world. So I think investors might make more money shifting some of those investments out of U.S. investments into international.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management, thanks for joining us here every week on The Opening Bell. We look forward to chatting with you in 2017.
Absolutely. We'll talk then.
All right, sir. Have a great day. Right now it's 5:26 in the morning. Matt Bubala in for Steve Grzanich here on The Opening. Let's get a check now of our tech trends.
From ABC News, tech trends. One high-tech toy is having trouble breaking out of its shell. This year, kids' holiday wish lists were hot for Hatchimals. But many parents, including Brittany Baker, are now complaining that these electronic hatchable eggs just won't crack.
I wanted to hatch.
She said that she was being patient because I had told her, you know, it just takes a little while for something to hatch. You have to be patient. And it's just been really upsetting for her.
Some parents are even saying that the toy appears to communicate with curse words. Spin Master, the company that makes Hatchimals, said in a statement that Hatchimals do not curse or use foul language, and to contact them directly if you think your toy is defective. ABC's Becky Ward. Worley says consumers should remember the three R's. You can ask for a full refund, ask for a replacement, or
you can try to get the item repaired. That is tough, though, when we're talking about finding someone familiar with repairs on a hatching owlicorn or penguala.
With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Mr. Grzanich has started his holiday early. I'm Matt Bubala filling in today. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody, on the last business day of 2016. Yesterday, we revealed that fewer Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week, continuing a nearly two-year trend. Over the past year, the number of people collecting benefits has fallen almost 5% to 2.1 million. That's good that more of us are out there working because we've got a lot of credit card debt to pay. Senior writer at creditcards.com is Fred Williams. He joins us on the phone right now. Fred, you guys did a really interesting look at the state-by-state debt that people carry on their credit cards and how long it'll take them to pay it off. Were you surprised by the findings?
Well, I was surprised by how different some of the states were, going from 20 months in some states to about a dozen months in others. So that's quite a difference.
Now, the way that you looked at this was you took the median income of each state as well, what the average credit card debt was, and if they paid it off at 15% a month, 15% of their income, which is the recommended, how long it would take them to pay it off and how much how long that would take and how much they'd have to spend and how much interest money they'd throw away on interest over that course of time. Who's the worst state?
Well, Alaska had the heaviest debt burden. It was up there at 20 months, even though their income is pretty high. They have the seventh highest earnings of the states. It took them 20 months and almost $1,000, $992 in interest to pay off their balance. Their average balance is also the highest at $7,500. So that's why.
That is a lot. And who's the state that's in the best shape?
Well, often these northern states do well. It turned out North Dakota had the lowest burden, also the next to the lowest balance at about $4,599. So it only took them 12 months and $370 to pay off their typical balance.
Okay, so now here in Illinois, I don't know if you're very familiar with Illinois, Fred, but we've had a lot of economic issues over the last couple of years. We have no state budget. We have pension issues. We have all sorts of issues going on. How are we doing when it comes to individually carrying credit card debt?
Yeah, hopefully the state's finances aren't impacting individuals. The average credit card balance there was just a hair over the national average at $5,633 in 2015. So that led to the payoff time was 16 months with $585 in interest. That's about in the middle of the pack, and that's where Illinois is with both the credit card debt and the income also, just a hair over average at earnings really at $32,900. So it was ranked 16th overall in income. So the debt burden ranked 15th in the nation. Not bad.
Yeah. You know, well, I'll tell you what, middle of the road economic news for Illinois is good news as it stands right now, Fred. When you talk about experts recommend that we dedicate 15% of our income to paying off the credit card debt. So that's what's recommended. How many of us actually do that, though?
Yeah, well, surveys have shown that a lot of people are able to, I think about 40% of people pay their entire balance every month. Of course, that's where to be. 15%, that can be hard if you've been building up a balance. This time of year, it's tempting to let that slide and just pay the minimum to give your budget some breathing room with the balance is probably swelled by Christmas spending. But once you do that once or twice, it gets to be a habit. It can be very hard to then get back on top of that of those payments and pay it down faster, as we all know. Paying just the minimum is very expensive. It'll take so much interest to pay off that balance.
It does take a long time. And, Fred, I think a lot of us, you know, we end up getting credit card debt. And for so long, a real great way, at least in theory, for consumers to help pay off debt or organize their debt is to maybe take out a home equity loan or do something like that to consolidate everything. But I imagine that might not be a recommendation you would have, because then you're just consolidating all your debt, maybe getting it at a lower interest rate, but then feeling that the burden is lifted a little bit because now you have it in one place. What's the best way as we move into 2017 for us to really get a handle on all of our debt and start getting it going the right way and paying it down?
Yeah, the home equity, of course, that is, as you say, that is a tricky question, because then you are putting, you get maybe a lower interest rate, but you are putting your home at risk. If you default on credit cards, obviously, that's unsecured debt. You're not going to lose the roof over your head. The best way, credit counselors tell me that the first step is to really get a handle on your income and your outgo, do a serious budget. This is pretty basic stuff, but a lot of people have neglected to do that or haven't tuned it up in a while. And that will show you where the leaks are in your spending, where things are, where money is going that you really don't need to be spending it that way. Another good piece of advice I heard was to, there's a lot of pressure to spend on kids at this time of year, or the time of year we just passed, and it's hard not to do it. They want to, keep up with their friends, et cetera. But if you can sit them down and say, look, this is why we're not going to get everything you want right away, why that, baseball goal or whatever is going to be put off until the spring. Not only are you, saving on the balance there, you're keeping your spending low, you may be teaching them an important lesson that will serve them well in years to come.
When you were looking at the study you did, the state-by-state study, was there a factor that contributed to why it's so much tougher in some states to pay off debt? Is it just basically the median income, or are there other factors that seem to factor into why people carry more debt in some places than others?
Unemployment is a big factor. States that have a high unemployment rate, and Alaska again was the case with this. Sure, if you get a pink slip or your hours are cut, that you need some income right away to maintain, just keep food on the table. And credit cards are often where people turn for that, so that drives the balance up. The important thing is to make sure it's a temporary thing. Get other sources of income coming in, cut expenses quickly. So that you're not just moving that balance into an unsupportable stratosphere.
Well, and we talked about the idea of consolidating loan, home equity, things like that. But maybe a wiser idea is to figure out the credit cards themselves. If you're carrying a high interest rate on credit cards, are there still opportunities to find other credit cards where you might be able to transfer that debt at a lower rate, even if only for 12 months or so?
Well, there is the balance transfer. If your credit is still good, you can get a balance transfer card and have a period of zero interest to try to pay that off. It'll cost you usually about 3% of the balance that you're transferring to do that. So if that makes sense, if you can stick to that balance and really pay it off during the 0% interest period, that would work. But that's hard to keep that discipline if you've already built up a balance. Why do you think now you're still not going to be able to turn around and pay it off? The other option is when you say consolidating the debt, if you go to get help from a credit counselor, this is if you're already right at the point of missing a payment or not being able to even make payments. A credit counselor can put together a line, put a plan rather, and put those debts together. You'll pay them one check a month. They can negotiate a lower interest rate. Given the cards, they know that they might take a loss on you if they don't give you a break. So rather than going to some late-night TV debt consolidation scheme, I would call a nonprofit consumer credit counseling agency, look one up and talk to them about budgeting and what they can do.
Big resolution for a lot of people in 2017, get our hand around that credit card debt and try to ease it up a little bit. Fred Williams, senior writer at creditcards.com. Thank you very much for jumping on the phone today.
Yep. Thank you.
We've got morning market numbers with Orion Samuelson coming up.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Matt Bubala in for Steve Grzanich today, 5:49 a.m. Good morning, everybody. The last weekday of the year 2016, last business day of 2016. All the markets are looking up today. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ look in good shape. Let's get a check on the latest on commodities and agriculture with WGN Radio West and Orion Samuelson. Hey, Orion, how are you this morning?
Well, good morning and greetings from Scottsdale, Arizona, where it's finally warming up a little bit more, 63 degrees at the moment. And the town is filled with football fans. We've had one bowl game this week, and of course the Ohio State game will be coming up later on this weekend. And then the farmers will come to town. The American Farm Bureau Federation is going to be holding its annual convention in Phoenix, and they'll be getting underway, well, a week from tomorrow, really, on the 7th of January. It's about a four-day convention. About 5,000 to 6,000 farmers and ranchers from all across the country will be here in Phoenix for the Farm Bureau Convention. But it's been a typical year and week in the commodity market world as well as the stock market. There is some portfolio evening up and getting ready to square off the position before leaving the year, going into the weekend. Board of Trade yesterday, wheat futures up about 1%, supported by short covering. And dollar weakened just a little bit. Corn futures edged higher. Seesaw trade during the day yesterday, and soybeans went down on ideas now of improving crop prospects in South America. And one trader, Jack Scoville, with the Price Futures Group in Chicago, said, "My phone is dead quiet. People are fine with a three-day weekend coming, and they don't want to do anything in the market." Wheat futures showed little reaction after the number one country for importing wheat, Egypt, bought 235,000 tons of wheat, not from the United States, but from Russia and Ukraine. The U.S. wheat still priced out of the market. And so yesterday, at the end of the day, we saw the March wheat contract up 3.5 cents, the March corn contract up 1.5, and January soybeans down 3.5 cents yesterday. So let's look at a little better news. Live cattle futures at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday hit a six-month high, thanks to higher prices for cash cattle. And for dressed beef, yesterday's wholesale beef price up $1.52 a hundredweight. And yesterday, packer bids for the cash cattle in Kansas came in at $114. And that happened after Wednesday's trade that priced cattle at $115 to $116.75 a hundredweight. So the December live cattle contract will terminate today, and it ended the day yesterday up $2.72 a hundredweight. A couple of other events on the calendar on next week, Tuesday through Friday. Farm Foundation will hold its annual roundtable get-together in Irvine, California. Won't be able to make that one this year because we'll be heading for Pasadena on Sunday, and we'll be there on Monday to serve as co-host with Pam Minnick on RFD-TV's coverage of the Rose Parade. So, Matt, we'll be thinking of you early Monday morning as we get ready in the dark because we, in order to do that parade on TV, we have to be up at about 2:30 Monday morning to get to the booth. And the RFD-TV booth is at the very beginning of the parade, so we get to see the opening ceremony. But the great thing about the parade, everything on every float can't be artificial. It must be real. So this is a real boom for the flower industry in Southern California.
And what's the weather looking like for Monday? Because I think there have been a few years where it's been a little chilly recently, haven't there?
Oh, yeah. It gets cool in the morning in Pasadena. I have not yet looked at what the temperature is going to be. I think it'll be a little warmer than the past couple of years. But Yeah, it gets down to pretty good jacket and glove weather that early in the morning. Once the sun comes out, then it begins to warm up rather quickly. But it's cool when we get there in the morning. And it takes a tremendous amount of work to set up to do the coverage on TV. I think there are six different television companies, Mexican company, and I think Japan sends in a company to do some of the coverage of the Rose Parade. So it wow. is what you'd call an international event. So,
and Orin, I would imagine with a 2:30 start time to your day, you don't stick around for the game very often.
Never have. No, nope, we have never attended. I think this is the sixth year now that I've served as co-host on the parade. And no, as soon as the parade ends, we get back to the airport and we get back home in Scottsdale in time to watch the game on TV.
Oh, so. That sounds good. Orin, looking ahead to 2017, as far as earnings, Monsanto reports next week. Otherwise, a relatively slow start to the year. How are things shaping up for the year ahead as far as agriculture?
Well, as far as agriculture is concerned, it's basically going to be a continuation of what we saw this year, a severe drop in commodity prices. And the reason for that is we have a lot of supply, particularly wheat. But the item that helped last year in the market in springtime was the weather problem in Argentina and Brazil, where they had a reduced crop of beans and corn. So far, that's not happening. So I think we're going into the new year with a very conservative outlook on what will happen to the recovery in commodity prices. And of course, this year it impacted the farm equipment industry. It impacted any supplier of inputs for agriculture. We don't see that getting much better in the year 2017. But then there's always the political world and the troubled spots in the world that can change things. And of course, weather.
You mentioned the political world, and earlier you had said, I believe, that Egypt just bought a ton of wheat, not from the U.S., but from Russia. As we
right.
have some tenuous relations going on right now with some areas around the world and President-elect Trump coming in, what is the concern about agriculture as it relates to trade if we start getting a little tougher with our trade policies?
Well, anything that would impact trade of agricultural products in a negative way is a major concern, because I keep saying 95% of the people on the planet live outside the United States, and our farmers and ranchers produce so much more than we can consume. So we have to trade. We have to ship it overseas. The wheat situation is not unusual. Egypt, the biggest buyer, but they tend not to buy U.S. wheat. They buy European Union, and, well, they bought Russian wheat this morning. The soybean picture and the corn picture, different. China, of course, is our number one soybean buyer. And so we're going to be watching relations with China very closely. And, you know, in agriculture, we're still waiting for the new secretary. We don't know who the new secretary will be under the Trump administration. So we're down to the end, and again wondering, when will he appoint a Secretary of Agriculture?
Well, one thing I will say is during this transition, you forget until, I know you don't, but I think the rest of us do every 4 years or 8 years, how many positions there are to fill. It's an arduous task, and there are a lot of names, a lot of people that need to get into those positions. And one of the gentlemen that I think was a good candidate, right, became our ambassador to China, correct?
Yeah, Governor Terry Branstad of Iowa. I had him on my possible secretary list. I had Rick Perry on my possible secretary list, and of course they've both taken other appointments. But the Governor Branstad appointment is a very good one. I've known the governor for over 30 years, and he has a relationship with the president of China that goes back 30 years. And personal relationships, particularly with the Asian countries, very important, as I learned a long time ago after going on several trade missions to the Pacific. They want to see in person, not by email or by any other means. They want to see in person the people they're dealing with. So Governor Branstad, a very good choice for that one.
All right, Orin. Well, you have a great time this weekend. Happy New Year. Good luck with the Rose Parade. We look forward to talking to you in 2017.
We'll be here. You have a great weekend. And I say, healthy new year, because if you're healthy, you're happy. So anyway, happy new year.
Absolutely. You too, Arjan Samuelson. Okay. Thank you so much. Now the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, December 30th, 2016. The slow week, as you can imagine, with the holiday week. The Chicago Purchasing Managers Index is due out today. Atari reports earnings today. And, of course, as we mentioned with Arjan, next week, Monsanto. We'll check in with Pete McMurray in the morning show next here on 720 WGN.